Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Breakfast in Bed by Sandra Brown. The moment she saw him, she knew it had been a mistake to grant Alicia's favor. There he stood on the porch of Fairchild House, with a suitcase in one hand, his portable typewriter in the other, and his tortoiseshell eyeglasses on top of his head, looking a trifle sheepish for obviously having gotten her out of bed. And there she was, Sloane Fairchild, owner and proprietor of the bed and breakfast establishment, standing just inside the arched front door, clutching her robe to her throat with white-knuckled fingers and shifting from one bare foot to the other. With her first look into Carter Madison's face, her stomach lurched, tightened, then stumbled over itself on its rolling descent to the cushiony floor of her torso. She became acutely aware of her nakedness beneath her nightgown and robe. Between her thighs, an unspeakably shameful yet magnificent tingling was reminding her of her sex. "Sloane? Miss Fairchild?" he asked. Her head bobbed up and down stupidly. "Carter Madison, I got you out of bed, didn't I?" Her tousled hair, her attire, and her bare feet, which he had smiled at, were dead giveaways. "Yes, I'm sorry for—" Her hand began a sweeping gesture down her body, then thought better of it, and clutched again at the collar of her robe. I thought you'd arrive earlier in the day. Come in." She moved aside, opening the thick oak door wider. He dragged his baggage through the passage. "I'd planned to fly up earlier in the day, but David had a soccer game and threw a fit when he found out I was going to miss it. Didn't Alicia call you?"
"No."
"I'm sorry. She was supposed to call and tell you I'd be late." He set his cases on the floor and looked down at her. Eyes, so unusual she'd never seen the like before, collided with hers. Even the faint glow shed by the nightlights she kept on in the hallways reflected their light brown sherry color. They were outlined by thick lashes, the same rich mahogany color of his hair. "I hate to have gotten you out of bed. Alicia said you were reluctant to have me staying here in the first place." His lopsided grin was a little too self-confident, a little too cocky, and absolutely captivating. Sloane self-consciously pushed back a wayward strand of hair. "Not you specifically, Mr. Madison," she replied, in a voice she hoped sounded crisply efficient. "Most bed and breakfast houses are managed by couples. Since I'm a single woman, I've restricted my guests to only couples or women traveling together." His eyes assessed her body. "That might not be a bad idea. You have Fairchild House's reputation to think of." "Exactly," she said, drawing the robe even tighter around her. The tour his eyes had taken hadn't gone unnoticed by her body, over which she suddenly seemed to have no control. She had lived comfortably in it for nearly 30 years, and now it had gone haywire and become a stranger to her. "You don't think that policy will cost you business?" She had the grace to smile. "I'm barely breaking even. I need every paying guest I can get." "I'm a paying guest," he said. Somehow the soft affirmation sounded like an intimate prophecy. She pulled herself up into a military posture. "I agreed to let you stay here only because you're my best friend's fiancé, and she asked me to house you for a month so you could write the last chapter of your novel before the wedding."
"Sleeping mistress," he said.
"Pardon?"
"Sleeping mistress. That's the title of the book."
"Oh."
"Have you read my books?"
"Yes."
"Did you like them?"
"Parts of them,
Which parts?"
"Most parts," she said, laughing at his probing curiosity. Her answer pleased him, but his smile became a little too warm, a little too personal for her already reeling senses. "I think it's wonderful about you and Alicia," she interjected quickly.
"She's a terrific lady," he said.
"Yes, she is. I thought..." "Never mind."
"Go on. You thought what?"
"Well, I thought she'd never recover after Jim got killed. She and the boys took his death so hard.
When I talked to her the other day, she sounded very happy. You're responsible. I know you handled most of the legal ramifications for her after his death. I was in China at the time of the accident. As soon as I could, I came home. Jim Russell had been my best friend for years. It was an honor to look after his widow for him. To the point of marrying her? Sloane wanted to ask. But this time she kept silent. She'd already made the mistake of broaching the subject with Alicia. This marriage means so much to me, Sloane, Alicia had said. Ever since Jim, well, you know how lonely I've been and what a handful the boys are for me. Carter's been terrific, patient with them and me. But he's about at the end of his rope, too. I think we need a break from each other before we take that final plunge. Alicia, Sloane had said hesitantly, do you love Carter? There had been a noticeable pause before Alicia responded in clipped phrases. Of course I do. I've always adored Carter. He and Jim were best friends. He wants to take care of the boys and me. He loves us, and we adore him. I know, Sloane had said, impatient with her friend's failure to see the point she was trying to make. You've told me 100 times how he and Jim grew up together, went to school together, how like brothers they were. But is that reason enough to marry him? He's not Jim, Alicia. That's cruel, Sloane. I'll never love anyone the way I love Jim, but I love Carter in a different way. Because of what Jason did to you, you're bitter and skeptical about any relationship between a man and a woman. That's why you've locked yourself away in that old house of yours and haven't looked at a man in the 2 years since that jerk jilted you. Since her friend had been painfully correct, Sloane had apologized and let the subject drop. Carter and Alicia seemed to have come to amenable marriage terms. Far be it from her to presume to counsel anyone on matters of the heart. Shaking herself out of her reverie, she said briskly, I don't know why I've kept you standing in the hall. I'm sure you're ready to go up to your room. I have no complaints about your hospitality. After all, I got you out of bed. Is everyone else asleep? 3 of the 6 bedrooms are occupied, and yes, everyone went up after dinner. That statement seemed to underline the fact that they were alone together in the darkened hallway, and that she was in her nightgown and robe and barefoot. Alicia said you'd want a large room with its own bath. She indicated the top of the stairs with a floundering hand. It's the last door at the end of the hall. He seemed disinclined to go up just yet. In any event, he didn't move. You weren't afraid to open your door to a man this late at night? Alicia had described you, and I recognized you from the picture on the back of your last book. His eyebrows contributed to an exaggerated scowl. The brows weren't a matched pair. One arched, while the other remained a straight bar over his eye. God, I hope not. My agent insisted on the Brooks Brothers suit. I think they even combed my hair before the picture was taken. It wasn't combed now. The San Francisco fog had settled on it, like a sparkling veil, drops occasionally beating on the deep russet strands that had fallen casually across his forehead. He was agreeably shaggy, and the army fatigue jacket had never seen the inside of Brooks Brothers. In fact, it looked like it had survived every war since the one of 1812. Nor had the faded jeans and scarred sneakers come from an exclusive haberdashery. The glossy black and white picture that had gazed back at Sloane from the cover of Parisian Escapade was a two-dimensional parody of the face that was smiling at her now. She had sought out the book on her cluttered shelf yesterday in order to acquaint herself with this expected guest. Alicia could have done a lot worse, she had thought objectively. Once the book was replaced on the shelf, she hadn't given Carter Madison's appearance another thought. The austere picture couldn't have prepared her for the flesh-and-blood version of his face. It was a rugged face that had enjoyed its 34 years. Alicia had told her how old he was. Laugh lines had been carved on either side of his mouth, and there was a network of crinkles at the corners of his eyes. What had been a blandly smiling mouth in the photograph was lazily sensuous in reality. The nose that had conveyed a haughty condescension in the picture was in reality long and straight and unpretentious.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?